Hello and welcome to the award-winning Canine Hooper's World podcast. Everyone's invited. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of season 4 of Canine Hooper's World, the podcast. Now, I am very excited because this fabulous trainer has been an influence on my training, but also her books have helped loads of dogs around the world, and loads of trainers are signed up to her protocols and stuff. And today we're going to be talking about patterns to give people a little bit of a clue. So, Leslie, how are you? Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, good morning. Well, my morning. I'm good. Ready to talk about stuff.
Excellent. So for people that don't know you, who are you? What do you do?
I am a dog trainer who specializes in working with dogs that have a nervous system similar to mine, anxious, hypervigilant, worried about the environment, maybe had some trauma in their past. I'm working on a talk right now, actually, for the Trauma and Dogs Conference, which is at the end of the month, so thinking about that. You know, just dogs that need support in the world. And I've also done a fair number of dog sports and worked with a lot of those dogs too, as well as working dogs, detection dogs, and stuff like that. So any dog that has to do some kind of job or just exist in an environment that is challenging, any dog that needs some support, that is what I like doing. And yeah. Behavioral standpoint, like learning theory, words standpoint. Most of my stuff is counter conditioning with an operant base, it's called. Yep. I use a lot of start button behavior. That's a term coined by my friends in Sweden, Emily and Eva, that you probably know. And that has to do with the animal being able to control a counter conditioning session, to, you know, initiating something with their own behavior to say that they're cool to keep going. And it's took it from the husbandry world and applied it to my counter conditioning stuff. But yeah, so that's what I do. I'm old now. I've been out there for quite a while. I have 3 books about this stuff. It's the Control Unleashed program, is what I call it.
Yeah.
And you know, lots of webinars, DVDs. I run a certification program for people that are already working trainers that want to like deep dive into the Control and Leash stuff. I certify them as Control and Leash instructors. Got a nice community all over the world. So that's what I'm doing.
Excellent. Because I kind of delve into the Facebook group sometimes, and it is always like a really welcoming group. And I think for me, because I first discovered Control Unleashed when I was actually working with a dog that he was some sort of bull breed mix. We never found out exactly what he was, but he was one of those dogs that would go from 0 to 60 in like less than a second. And then you'd have to try and bring him down again. And when we were doing activities with him, we had to be really mindful of what sort of stuff we were doing, what the kind of arousal levels were and stuff. And I was sort of looking for a bit more to do with him, because we kind of addressed some of his big emotions regarding other dogs and stuff like that. And we got him to the point where he could be in a group class actually quite happily. And as long as we were mindful of distance and movement, actually everyone did brilliantly. And then I discovered the first Control Unleashed book and was like, oh, there's some good business. And I actually, what was refreshing for me as a trainer was that I could say to my client, there's this really good book, get yourself a copy and we will work through it together.
Nice.
Because I like the fact that she could kind of go, oh, I'd like to try this game today, or oh, can we have a look at this, or I'm not sure about this, or how does that work? And actually it kind of it made it more of like a team thing because we were literally singing from the same hymn book, if you like.
That makes me so happy. I love that. Thanks. So
where did the kind of Control Unleashed come from? Was it from your sport background or is it just amalgamation of everything? What was made you go, I need to write a book?
So what happened was I was in grad school for creative writing. And I always grew up with dogs. Dogs were always central in my life. And I adopted some dogs. One had serious problems, just extremely fearful, aggressive to people, had been rescued, like humane law enforcement type rescued. And I grew up with like these little privileged pugs that, you know, sat at the table. So I came from sort of, I'll give him treats and I'll love him and he'll be okay. And that's absolutely not what happened. And so, you know, I sought out help and found Dr. Karen Overall, who's my mentor, who at that time was head of the behavior clinic at University of Pennsylvania Vet School. So he was her patient. And then, I stayed. And I also rescued another little mix who ended up being like a just an amazing sport dog. She was like a live for the ball, die for the ball kind of dog. And I learned clicker training with her, joined a sports club, started teaching at the sports club. So what happened with Control Unleashed is I just put those things together. I saw these dogs at our club that you know, were having a hard time in these classes where all kinds of things happen. And it's like, you know, people in sport classes are focused on teaching a skill. And it's like the handler has to learn a skill at the same time the dog is learning a skill. And then there's also this issue of being able to learn that skill while other things are happening around you that are difficult. Barking, mm-hmm. other dogs are maybe running faster, tugging, the energy is high, etc. So you know, I kind of broke all those things down and I was like, let's use what I know about behavior modification to teach dogs to just function better. They can work off leash around all these things. Mm-hmm. So I started teaching a class for that at my club, you know, and my friend Julie named it Control Unleashed. And then it just became this giant thing where people from other clubs were coming and because no one was doing that yet.
Yep.
Now lots of people do it, but you know, it was something that was needed. And I started writing articles about it for Clean Run. And then people liked the articles and I was like, oh, you know what? This could actually be a book. I did not know at that time what was
the
going on.
The journey it was going to take you on. What an incredible journey, right?
Oh, yes. It was nuts at first. I was not handling it well. I was like, what?
I think a lot of us can relate to that, where you do a thing and then suddenly go, oh my God, I've done a thing. Okay, so how do we handle
it? Crazy. It was crazy town. You know, and I'm very grateful for that. But when it started, I was like, what? I don't know what to do.
No, I can understand that. I mean, you know, I started like, oh yeah, I'm gonna teach a bit of hoopers, and now it's like a big thing, and I'm like, oh okay, cool. So
everybody loves that. It's super fun.
Oh, it is the most I joke, it's like the most fun inclusive dog sport you can do. Like all the dogs can do hoopers. I can't think of like any dogs that can't at least have a little play, even if it's at home in their own back garden or their own backyard. Like every dog can play hoopers to an extent, so that's one of the reasons I love it. But with going back to what you were saying with like teaching classes to kind of get dogs to be focused and stuff like that, this is one of the skills that I found kind of going from pet to sport dog stuff that I don't know, when we kind of do pet dog classes, and by that I mean like your kind of obediency type stuff, you know, loosely walking, your recalls and stuff.
Yeah.
The dogs are kind of getting used to working around other dogs. And I think mainly because the arousal levels are lower, but it just seems to be like, this is what you do when you are in a group class and you all just work around each other and it's fine. And if a dog needs a little bit more room, they get a bit more room, but they kind of work together. Whereas as soon as you get into that kind of sport mentality, I think sometimes I've literally just the episode before with Andrew Hale, if people haven't listened, go back and listen. But we were talking about task over care and how sometimes in sport, task becomes kind of paramount and we can forget the care element. And I feel that in class, it can be really hard to, and I know this from myself teaching group class hoopers, when the dogs are first learning the game and we're kind of building a bit of hoop value or teach them about one barrel, you can have 3, 4, even 6 dogs if you've got the room working at one time. Once the dogs start becoming a bit more proficient and know the game, it becomes a lot harder to have more than one dog working because they're doing the thing and it's fun.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's like, I like that saying, like, every dog is a study of one. So there's dogs that, you know, can just be in a crazy setting and just do it. And there's dogs that can be in a, you know, pretty low key class for manners and, you know, have an absolute fit, and there's everything in between. But the sports, depending on the sport, right? So I came up in fly ball and agility. So,
oh, wow. Okay. So high
arousal sports. Okay. This is a self-selected community of people that got dogs that were, you know, going to be good at these types of activities, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, we're told early on, you know, be exciting and, you know, everyone's like ready. And everything is about tugging. And for some dogs, that's great. You don't have to do any extra work. For other dogs, they can't handle it at all. And then everything in between. But, you know, people are taught to, it's like, you know, when everyone is given the same set of instructions, it's not going to fit everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's just a lot of be exciting, get your dog excited to work, build their drive. And there's not a lot of like operationalizing. What does that mean? What are we actually talking about? What is happening in the dog? And so, you know, dogs that are worried about stuff in the environment, their mm-hmm. arousal level is heightened. That's gonna, you know, that's gonna go sideways at some point.
Yeah.
And even dogs that are fine in the environment, their arousal gets to a certain point and you might lose the precision of the skills that you were teaching, you know, mm-hmm. which my friend Hannah Brannigan is really, really good at talking about and working with. So, you know, there's just so much art, you know, and it's about working with each dog, what their threshold is, what's, mm-hmm. you know, motivating them, what's worrying them, and finding the right conditions. To me, the care part is seeing, you know, the animal in front of you. You guys are a team and figuring out the best conditions and all that stuff. So, you know, you can be very successful as a team. Well, it depends on how you define success. You know, you can get a lot of titles, but have a dog that is stressed, but just able to do those things. Mm-hmm. You know, so I like my students always talked about CUQs. Like a Q is a qualifying score in some of these sports.
Mm-hmm.
And, so CU being control and leash, that, you know, you went to a show and your dog was, you know, feeling comfortable around other dogs running or whatever,
mm-hmm.
asking you to initiating work with you, asking you to do stuff, happy, not reactive. Those are CUQs. They're more important than, you know, your points or whatever.
And one of the things,
have all of it, you know, but there's some dogs that can't get, you know, cannot be competitive dogs until they've had a bunch of CUQs and they've just learned to feel comfortable and
yep.
want to do these things, you know.
I mean, one of the things I've taken from it kind of with using those patterns and things is like our start line setup. And I've been messing around with this quite a bit, but what I've noticed now is that I'll go through our kind of ritual of what I ask him to do. So I ask him for a middle, and then I actually do a backwards count. If he starts to sniff, I'll start 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. If I get to one, then I'm like, buddy, you need to listen now. And he's like, oh, okay, right, ready. And then I ask for a nose touch. And if he can do the nose touch, then I know he's listening and we're working and we've got it. Because having an entire male dog, one of the things with Hoopers is we do have bitches in season competing.
Yeah, most sports
so
do.
So what a lot of the time over here, like agility bitches in season aren't allowed at shows. So this was something that I had to kind of go, right, okay, we need to train for this. And I was very fortunate that I was at a competition where there were three bitches in season. The ground conditions weren't optimal for us. So I took it as a training situation and went, right, can all the girls go in first? And then I'm going to bring him on the line. Because also it meant I could reward him and stuff because we NFC'd the run. But even things like the reward he has at the end of a run, I've noticed will then affect his next run and how we're doing. Because it all becomes a sequence of events, doesn't it? That becomes predictable for the dog. So Dodge has big emotions. It's not a secret on the podcast. And he has been a journey. I don't like the term reactive because we're all reactive. He just has big emotions. But I know when we are going to shows where, especially if it's a new showground and it's a new rule book and it's new people, both my anxiety is like ridiculous, but also I know that he's going to be like, oh, well, hang on, this is somewhere new. So he becomes more hypervigilant. So then I'm more anxious because he's more hypervigilant. Then he's more hypervigilant because I'm anxious. And you just end up in this just horrible whirlwind of like, I'm sorry, why did we come to a trial today?
Right. Why did I spend money on this? I could have gone to the woods.
Right. I could have spent money on a private field for an hour and had a lovely time and not seen anybody. So what have been like your experiences with dogs that, you know, maybe are a bit more emotional about the world?
Oh, I know your podcast listeners can't see, but you can see that my.
Right. So we have an extra special guest on. Whom is this?
This is Kizzy. I call him a trouble fox.
So for the listeners, imagine a fox but in white with two black ears. That's the best description I can get. He looks like a little fox, but like the wrong color. Oh my god, he's so cute.
he's basically a Skipper Key that's just off colored.
Oh, okay. So. Very cute though, super cute. So is he a sport dog or is he a sofa ornament?
Is he a what?
A sports dog or a sofa ornament?
Right now he's a bit under a year and he's a sofa ornament.
Oh, okay. So he's a baby.
He's a baby. We'll see what happens. He has an interesting rescue story, but he's basically the cutest dog that I've ever seen, which is why I took him.
Because let's not joke though. We like our breeds because yes, they have their jobs and their personality, but it is an aesthetic thing. We all have the looks of dogs we like. So
ridiculous.
I'm not hating you for that.
That's ridiculous. Ridiculous creature.
So have you kind of thought plans for him? Or I know we both got completely distracted. I'm like, I can't remember what the last question was. So we're just going to move on. And if any of the listeners are screaming, then I'm sorry. But my brain's had a glitch, so it's fine.
Yes.
There was a cute dog. You can't expect me not to get distracted.
You were trouble foxed, is what happened.
My brain does not also need a trouble fox involved, okay? So what are you kind of, I mean, do you kind of have plans for your dogs? Do you kind of go, right, I would like to do agility with this one or flyball with this one? Or have kind of, do you now go, right, let's try some things and see what the fit is? What's your kind of, maybe from like how it was then to what it is now?
Has Well, that's it. That's the answer. You know, I got into certain sports and then, you know, like other people in those sports, I wanted dogs that would have the aptitude to continue doing what I knew. And, you know, once you know how to teach a certain skills for a certain sport, wow, it's really fun to then start over, you know, with a puppy, you know, and you have, you know, a better idea of what you're doing. You have different things in mind. And so that's fun and rewarding. And, you know, you got to make sure that you have a dog that matches what, you know, you were hoping for, not trying to make a dog do something that they're not suited to, obviously. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, I went from a person rescuing pet dogs to a person wanting to compete and going to shows and trying all the different sports to a person that at this point, I don't care. Dogs come into my life. And then, you know, right now I'm taking my turf to nose work and obedience. The nose work, he just loves so much. We're having a really good time, and that's really a good sport kind of for anyone that wants like a structured, fun activity to do. Pretty much any dog can enjoy it. And the environment's managed very well. There's lots of visual cues about what's happening, so that it's just so much information. So it's good for dogs that worry about it. It's a good activity. And we're doing the obedience. I say it's for me because I like just working on precision skills. It's like some people do crossword puzzles or whatever. But it's also for him too, because he just wants to go out and do things and get treats and see friends. And but nose work he could like live for. But you know, there are things that he wants to do. And yeah, with the young one, I'm actually hoping, and if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. It usually doesn't. I'm hoping to do some therapy. I'm hoping to do some therapy work with him. And the reason I say it usually doesn't is because every time I want to do therapy dog stuff, I don't have a dog that wants to be a therapy dog. I've only had one in all the dogs that I've had that I thought was well suited and actually did it with. But this little one is just so friendly and so cute, and he loves everybody, that I think maybe I could get back to it with him, and that'll be fun. But yeah, I mean, it depends on now who I've got and what we're doing. I do like to go to some type of class because, you know, now that I've got like kids and I'm always working and there's always stuff going on, I'm really not going to like, you know, train my dogs unless I'm in a class and it's structured and that's what you're going to take that time to go do. Whereas it used to be, I just kind of like obsessively taught things all the time. I had dogs that were fine with that. And, you know, we just did lots of things. And now that just isn't happening unless I have like a structured time away from the rest of life. It's just how it is.
Well, we joke, don't we, as trainers, that quite often, like, we don't have time to train our own dogs. And sometimes it is hard. You have to go, right, okay, we need to, like, put some work in. So if you do have a class at this time of the week, when you're going every week, you're like, oh, today's a training day. And you can kind of get your brain into training mode for your dog rather than all your clients' dogs, right?
Right. Yeah, it's plus just two kids just kind of sucks the life right out of you.
No. I mean, this is what younglings do to you, I'm afraid. This is one of the things. So on the kind of pattern of younglings, this is quite a nice segue. Obviously, you've got the Control Unleashed book, which you can get everywhere on the Amazons from the bookshop.
Yeah, there's three of them.
And then there is the puppy program.
Oh, right. You're just talking about the first book. Got it.
So yeah. So Control Unleashed was the first one. And then did the puppy program come out next, or the Reactive to Relaxed?
Control Unleashed was the first one. I wrote it. There's like a class curriculum in it. It was based on the course that I was teaching at the sport club for dogs that were, you know, having trouble just being in that environment and things that you could do. And obviously it also works for what we label reactivity and other things, right?
Yeah.
Because it's all the same, you know, like the conditioning is all the same.
Yeah.
Then I wrote the puppy program, and it was like the first book was more for you already have some kind of problem that you are working through. And the puppy one was you're just starting out, and it didn't have to be a puppy. It could just be like a new dog, mm-hmm. you know, that you haven't done anything with yet. And hasn't already learned that some environments are yuck.
Yep.
So, you know, so yeah, so it's kind of like, you know, here, let's raise this puppy together. You know, this is what I would be doing. I mean, I always feel like my best advice is, well, this is what I'd do if that was my dog personally. Yeah. I take them out of classes for a while. No one ever wants to be told that, and do all these other things. But if it was my dog, that's what I'd do.
Yeah. But I think I actually read a really interesting post on Facebook today. Siobhan Owens wrote it about expectation and the amount of expectation handlers, owners put on their dogs. Right? It was just a short Facebook post. But it was a really good post.
Photo of Roddy's on it. Yes.
Because I was like, actually, yeah, this is true. Because we do. Because, absolutely. You know, at the weekend, I was tired. Dodge was a bit tired. We went to a trial. It didn't quite go to plan. Mental note to self. Next time, if you're feeling tired or, you know, he's tired, just don't go.
Right, right.
Because I know if I'd said to my clients, like, if they were like, oh, I'm not sure, I'd have been like, look, if you're not feeling it, don't go today. And I was like, take your own advice.
Yeah. Take your own advice.
yesterday when I was teaching, I can't remember what day of the week it was, whatever day I was teaching this week, one of my clients, I was expecting her to bring her older dog, and then her puppy's just starting to come. And the week before, we just worked on puppy sitting in the boot of the car, watching the older dog do the running. And I was reinforcing for calmness in the car while the handler and the dog were doing their hoopy stuff, which was all good. And this week she didn't come in the puppy, and I was like, oh, what happened? She was like, oh, well, something happened, and then we had to go to puppy class, and she's been in the car all day, and she was asleep when I went to leave, so I've left her at home. And I was like, yes,
mm-hmm.
perfect. I am so, and actually I was so in a way relieved that she'd left the puppy at home, but also proud that she had kind of taken on board that she's a baby and she's learning. And actually, sometimes if they're sleeping, like, literally let sleeping dogs lie,
right?
You didn't need to wake the puppy up to come to training, because she would have been tired and probably been a bit grumpy, and she wouldn't have been in a right learning zone because she would have been tired. So actually her chilling at home while her brother came out is also a very good lesson,
right? Absolutely. You've got to balance activity with rest, decompression, etc. I know all your listeners know that, but it's important. And I mean, certainly living with kids that have inherited all the various neurodivergences that my husband and I have generously bestowed upon them, you know, balancing these things is important, you know.
Yeah. Do you think though as well, and like that being, I quite like the term neurospicy, because I think it kind of
favorite word. I'm actually
neurosparkly, because I just feel that sparkly suits me better than spicy, but that's my choice.
Oh my god, that's what my daughter is. She's gonna love this.
There you go. So she said, you can tell it, neurosparkly. I feel it's just, yeah.
Oh my god, hilarious.
Not quite as fiery as the spicy side, right? It's just a bit more sparkly. I love this. But do you find that in ways that's actually helped you on your training journey?
I think 1,000%. Because I just think a certain way and, you know, just do my thing.
It always surprises me how many other pet professionals I feel are on the sparkly, spicy side of
brain function. It's interesting, but it's at this point, I expect it. It's so prevalent.
Yeah.
But, you know, it also makes things hard. Like, I can't keep up with my certifications because I can't keep track of, like, continuing education credits and my passwords and going online and, you know, proving that I attended this thing or not. And the certifications matter to me, but I can't. And I've tried to talk to them and been like, there needs to be more support for people, you know, with ADHD or that are having difficulty, you know, keeping track of this stuff. Yeah. So it's like, you know, the irony is like people are getting there's continuing education credits to keep their certification from going to my stuff, learning from me, but I can't keep mine because I can't fill form out online. It's very frustrating. So there's just stuff like that. And, you know, if you were somebody that was asking me to do a webinar or something for you, then you would know. I was very good about communicating with you about the time and getting on Zoom at the right time and everything. Yeah. But, you know, if I was supposed to.
We will just, little confession from both of us. We were actually meant to record this about a month ago and both of us forgot.
Well, there you go. I mean, that's exactly.
I messaged you frantically, like, "Oh my god, Leslie, I'm so sorry." And you went, "That's okay, because I forgot." And I was like, "Oh, good, we both forgot."
I had no idea. So thank God you're sparkly, because you know I can anger people. You know, they're expecting me to whatever, or here's a deadline, and it's not because I don't take it seriously. It's because it just isn't going to happen exactly how you were hoping.
it's hard, right, isn't it? And actually, I'm glad we're having this conversation, because I think sometimes us non-neuronormal.
Oh my god!
Sorry, what is normal actually? I think that a lot of the time it's not spoken about in the industry, and as much it's almost like we kind of all know we're on that spicy, sparkly side, but sort of I feel like it's been maybe since COVID, everyone's starting just about mental health more, that we are being a bit more open to going, actually, I'm really sorry, like I can't stay. Because we all understand it in dogs. We understand when dogs are over threshold. We understand that dogs need decompression days. I've started applying it to myself.
Exactly. Yep.
And I feel like maybe we didn't so much before, but now we are looking at more of that care and understanding what we need as well as our dogs, so that we can work together coherently as a team, rather than just going, right, the task is to do this.
Right.
We need to do that.
I'm taking like a month off from having to make webinars because the computer just, it's just exhausting. Something always goes wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Then trying to record it and send it to somebody else, something always goes wrong. And I'll spend a whole day just trying to get something that I've worked on to somebody else. And it's just horrible. And then I walk around the house going, I thought I was, you know, I did this because I thought I was going to be working with dogs. And I literally have spent all my time since COVID making things online and trying to send them to other people. And it's just like, it's exhausting. So I'm taking a month off.
And I applaud that self-care and well done. I mean, I just had a week off and I made sure I didn't take my laptop with me. And I was like, no, I need to just have a week away. And as it turned out, where we were, there were cats everywhere. So I still had animals to talk to, but it was, there were literally cats everywhere. But it was good to kind of have that week to sort of process. But I know what you mean about, like, especially creating online content. At the moment, I'm filming for a new course that I'm going to be presenting in Australia. And I'll be like, I'll have filmed it and I'll have in my brain, right, we're filming this for that. And then the next day I'm like, right, I need to edit this. Oh, okay, hang on a minute. And I almost have to like find a file in my brain that had what I needed to go with the video. And I'll have to watch back the videos, right?
Right, of course.
And you just think, I'm trying to like do all of this, like give all this content and produce all this stuff, but actually I don't think people realize how hard it can be, right?
Oh my God. And the pressure of it. It's like, you know, it's, yeah. Like, you should be making more things. Other people are making more things or whatever.
Yeah, you know, you should be recording podcasts and all that stuff. I'm going to give the listeners a little sneaky. We are going to have a mid-season break in this season of Hoops World podcast because, unfortunately, I had some canine bereavements this year, which affected me a lot. It affected the schedule. And normally I'm like 10 episodes ahead of myself. And actually, I've fallen behind. So we're going to get to episode, I think, maybe 20. And then I'm going to have a little break of a few weeks just to get back on top of recording, get a little catalog going, and then we'll be back for the next part of season four. So that's kind of a pre-warning for everyone that this is like part one of season four and there will be more. I'm not quitting, but yeah, sometimes we just need to rest, right?
Yeah. I mean, how else are we going to perform? You know, how, like, people expect me to perform, like, I'm a sport dog. So I need my decompression as well, right?
Yeah.
I also am just, you know, a mammal. So.
Yeah, learning is learning and we all need to rest and recuperate and all the rest of it. I mean, I don't, you know, my dogs get like the best healthcare, the best food, the best supplements. And then there's me like.
And then there's you. Day. Exactly.
Oh, yeah, I probably should eat more than a donut that I found in a cupboard somewhere. Like. And then the dog has like the most strict regime of like food and everything else that goes into him, and like once we get off this I need to go and make him some fat bombs because we're trialing this weekend, so we have those when we're at the shows. And I'm like, I think I've got a sandwich and some crisps for my lunch at the competition.
Yeah, it's hard. One thing I find with my brand of spice is that I have a certain amount of energy. I can put it into a thing per mm-hmm. day. I don't have it left over for like another thing.
Mm-hmm.
No. So I took 5 years off when I had my kids. I have twins. They're 11 now.
Oh, wow. Twins are a lot. I've got twin nephews. So I can empathize the work because like me and my husband looked after them like one time. And I'm like.
One time. No. Yeah. So yeah, you know, I was, you know, I hyper-focused, that's my brand. And, you know, I was hyper-focused on them. And then when they were five going into kindergarten, I was like, I wonder if people would want me to go back to work. Would anyone even remember who I was? And of course they did. And now I'm, you know, I've been back to work, but.
Now you're like, why did I go back to work?
Like, yeah, no. But you know, it was a little scary. Like I haven't been out there for 5 years constantly putting out content, but it was fine. Everyone was like, yay, control unleashed. So thank goodness for that.
But I think because like the brand is it's known, you know. And I think because you can apply it to pet dog stuff and sport dog stuff, I think that's one of the beauties of the program is that
it's for everybody.
Exactly that. It is all encompassing, isn't it? Which, I mean, you kind of created a bit of a unit.
It's a feeling. It's for any dog that feels a feeling can use it.
I feel like if you're going to niche, like that's a pretty good niche to get hold of, right?
Right.
There's me over here teaching dogs how to run through plastic hoops, and there's you teaching the dogs that feel stuff.
I don't
feel the comparison's quite the same, really. So, like, thinking along the lines of, like, sport and stuff like that, if people aren't familiar with kind of Control Unleashed and what it's about, like, seriously, guys, go check it out because you will get something out of it. Like, every person, every dog team will get something out of it, even if it's just one of the games and you go, oh, actually, this is really good. I mean, when Dodge was going through that delightful adolescent stage, I was
that's using... my favorite.
Yeah, that lasted longer than the books told me it was going to. I'm just going to say. This whole, it lasts 6 months. Bullshit. It was 2 years, people. Like,
oh, no.
What happened? But there were a lot of the games, and actually our kind of start line weight of me doing that backwards counting has come from one of the Control Unleashed games. This became one of our
That makes
like
sense. Yeah.
little patterns that I was like, well, I know that he, like, I can do like the walking and then I say this number and he pays attention. So actually, let's kind of work with him. So you're allowed to sniff, bud, but once I get to one, that's your little allocation window of sniffing. And now we need to either carry on our walk or actually get on with the trial or, you know, move somewhere else out of the way. And
because we gave him a transition, right? Like, we expect, like, so think about, you know, somebody with ADHD, for example, we get fixated on something, mm-hmm. then you can expect us to pay attention to something else. We can't just switch like that, you know, and a dog that's like in the middle of a scent or whatever can't, you know, it's, you know, and then suddenly you need their attention to go do something totally different from what their brain is focused on. The counting mm-hmm. helps. Counting gives transitions, you know.
Yeah, exactly that. So with him, I started training it as when we were walking, you know, we're having a lead walk, we're just mooching, don't need to be anywhere. And he'd be sniffing and I would literally start the countdown. And if he came back to me before one, then he'd get extra cookies. So I almost started with five treats in my hand and then went 4, 3, 2, 1. So if he stopped at one, he still got a cookie. But if he stopped at four, he got four cookies.
Or you could also use functional rewards. And if he came back, you could say, okay, you could go sniff for another 3 seconds.
Exactly. Because my goal in mind was for it to help that start line task. It was like, right, I need you to kind of go, okay, I'm back into work mode.
It's a nice ritual. It's a very nice start line.
Yeah, it was. And it's one of the things actually a lot of my clients have been starting to do to get their dogs focused again. And I do think that we kind of, and maybe just people that aren't sparkly or spicy don't understand that transition necessity necessarily, because, you know, my husband can go from one thing and then pick up another and I'm like,
I
can't do that yet, like, it's not a thing. So I find it very interesting that you've kind of gone, well, my brain needs that transition time, so actually dogs probably could do with similar.
Because look, they're taking in more information than we are. And I'm certainly taking in enough information all the time. They're mm-hmm. taking in so much more than I am. I can't smell anything. I have like no sense of smell, right? So like, they're processing things all the time that we don't even know are happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, we kind of, you know, I hope, you know, most trainers and, you know, caregivers that are listening, you know, understand that dogs need to sniff and dogs need to process the world. So it makes sense that we need to transition them from you're doing this thing to you're doing this thing. I'm also kind of wondering what your take is on kind of this whole, what is obedient, what is trained? Because I'm the first one to say my dog's loose lead walking is appalling because it wasn't a priority.
Right. It's almost never a priority with me. Except
cool. that my recall needs to be 99.999% because I need that. But if he's a bit rubbish walking on the lead, then meh.
Yeah, I don't have the energy to put into everything. So my dogs know some things really well and other things not. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, to me, like, I call it training or whatever, but I just mean like sort of a broader picture of like creating a dialogue, you know, about I might know how this certain situation is working better than you, so I can give you information about it. You mm-hmm. can ask questions. Like, I will listen, you know, more like that.
It's quite a kind of empowering thing as well, isn't it, for the dogs to go, oh, hang on, because it gives them that level of predictability. And
yes, here, I'll give you an example if you want.
Please.
One of my favorite examples is I have a border collie, Ever. I adopted her from a rescue group when she was about 5 months old, And she had never even like worn a collar, never been taken for a walk. She was in a foster home with like 10 other dogs or something. It was kind of crazy situation. And she was very afraid to take a walk. She was very afraid of traffic. She did not like other dogs. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I started this thing where like I ask her, like, which treat would you like? Which toy would you like? Which this would you like? Which kid would you like to say hi to? Just like these little choices of two things, right? And then I would take her to the hiking trail, and there's a lot of like forks in the road where you could go one way or the other, but you can stand and see like both paths. Mm-hmm. So I would take her on purpose to those, and I'd be like, which way do you want to go? And she'd look one way, another way, and then like pull a little bit to one way, and we'd go that way, right? So that became like such a thing that she got to do. And then I was doing other stuff with her to desensitize her to being outside and taking a walk. But, mm-hmm. you know, so one day after like several months, I took her to one of those spaces where she could see and she could pick which way to go. And I asked her, and one of the paths was clear and the other path had a person and a dog. So I'm just assuming, you know, we're going to go to the path without the person and the dog. Mm-hmm. But she asked to go the path with the person and the dog. And I had to be like, do I listen to that? Did she not see them?
Are you making good choices right now?
Yeah, are you making good choices? Like, you know, am I making this whole thing up and she hasn't been asked to go down certain paths at all because I'm actually insane? You know, but I was like, all right, I'm just going to listen to this and we're just going to see what's going to happen. And I took her down that path and she got to a certain distance from that dog. And then she looked at me and she offered to sit. And, you know, she did what I call the look at that game. It's a chain of behaviors where they look towards something and back to you, like point it out to you. Mm-hmm. She's just like offering a sit and like showing me, you know, where the dog is and looking at me. And it was amazing. Like she was able to tell me that she was ready to go down the trail with the person and the dog, you know, choose the distance she wanted from it, offer behaviors to me. You know, it's like dogs can give you so much information about like where they're at and what they're ready for, rather than you having to decide.
Yeah.
If you create conditions where they can talk to you like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, the look at that game is probably the one I played the most with Dodge. Like, and even now, you know, on if we're at a new show and there is stuff, like we'll get to the other day, we kind of have what I call for want of, and it's awful because he's called Dodge, but it is Get Out Dodge, where we just have to walk through the area and it's like, dude, with me. And as soon as I say with me, that literally means your lead needs to be short. You need to be at my side. And we're just going to march through here. Don't lose your shit. Just stay with me. I will get you through this area. Mm-hmm. That's his predictor for that. I'm literally like, with me. And he's like, okay, mama, we can do this. And there are times where, you know, he comes out the other side looking more like a dinosaur because like all the hackles are up. And then he does a big shake off and goes, okay, we got through it. Okay, cool.
Did it.
And then I'm like, right. Can we do some work? Can we do? And quite often he'll be like, mom, there's another dog coming, and he'll just lay down. And I'm like, good boy, that's what we want. And we play the look at that game, you know. And for him as a youngling, I tried to get him doing more laying down rather than sitting up, just because it gave me that split second more if he was going to explode. But also, down for him is a much calmer, more stationary position. Mm-hmm. And he amazes me, even at the weekend, you know, new show ground, he, middle is his kind of safe position. He's like, I'm going to put myself in middle. And he went over to hubby, put himself in the middle and laid down and just watched the other dogs running in the rings. And I was like,
what a good boy.
You're making good life choices.
Right.
It's amazing. But it's because we did that game from quite early on because he was showing big emotions towards the world at like, well, 10 weeks old. I got him at 17 weeks.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, he had a lovely family that had him first. I'm always grateful for them to realize that he was not the correct dog for them. And I'm grateful to Gavin Jeanette for going, we've got this dog that comes to classes that you'll adore. And I got started on my journey. But Dodger's kind of sort of rekindled my fire for working with those dogs with big emotions, working with the dogs that also question stuff and building the trust for him to go, yeah, you've got this. I can let you handle this rather than him feeling he just has to deal with it.
Right. Something I really liked about your story about the with me is that people use that cue, you know, with a very sort of like you're talking about obedience versus mm-hmm. whatever. And you said it and it meant, I've got this. I'm gonna help you get through this. We're okay. And he can, you know, feel that relief and just okay, right? Mm-hmm. But the way that it originally was, you know, most people are still using it, like with me means like, all right, you need to heal, you have to stay in this position no matter what we pass, you know. And it, you know, it can put a lot of pressure on a dog that's worried about passing things. And now you've told them you have to walk through this and you have to do it in a really specific way, you know. And if obviously if it's been trained with any kind of aversive, like, you know, leash pup for not being with me, you know, then you have, you know, or else added to it, you know. And it's like just the paradigm shift that you offered of like, you know, with me, don't, you know, you're gonna get through this with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I'm not gonna let anything bad happen.
Yes.
I've now made this predictable, you know what that cue means, we're gonna pass this stuff, you know, versus, you know, what it tends to mean to people. It's like, there's where the shift is between obedience and whatever this is, whatever, you know, that we're talking about.
Yeah.
You know? I'm okay with using the word training because it's just like learning certain skills, you know, and it can be very sort of a two-way communication and all mm-hmm. that, but maybe other people are moving away from that word because they have a connotation about it or whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, to me, it's just like, it just means learning, you know? Like,
I mean, probably that with me came from many, many moons ago, me doing obedience stuff, and that meant come till and come close. So it probably originally had that kind of thing, but because of the relationship I've got with him and because I've learned that stealing Kim Brophy's phrase, you know, dude, I'm the sheriff, you're the deputy. This is where I'm in charge in this right now. And I know that when I say that, I do have to kind of, you know, stand a bit taller and push my chest out a bit. And I'm like, right, we've got this. And I will ask people to move. And this is the other thing that Dodge has really taught me, is that being an advocate for him, but also not being afraid to explain to other people
mm-hmm.
what we need them to do, because they are oblivious. They do not know. They are just having a lovely day. They do not understand that me and the shepherd need them to move.
So oblivious. Everyone's in their own world. And you do have to advocate. And boy, have I learned that with having kids as well. You know, kids with learning differences.
Mm-hmm.
You have to become like a grizzly bear.
I can imagine that. I can.
You have to do it if you have a dog with feelings as well. So yeah,
it is tough, isn't it? And when you're kind of in, especially when you're at competition, you know, when you're at a trial, like everyone's focused on their own dog, because absolutely. You're not worrying about what everyone else is doing, because you're worrying about your own dog and you're worrying about your own anxieties. And you know, if it's agility or hoopers, have I remembered the course? Is this happening?
There's all this other stuff to worry about as well.
There's all these other layers. And then you're did I remember to shut the van door? Did I secure the other dogs in when I let this one out? Like, you know, there's right. all those other thoughts. So I can totally empathize why people aren't always understanding. But one thing I'm always very mindful of is when someone does just take that little moment of their day to give me the space I need or move out the way or just give me a little bit of extra room or time, I always thank them for it.
Yeah.
Because I want to reinforce their good behavior.
Yeah, that's very nice. I really like at Clicker Expo, when you show up, you're given tickets that you can give to other people. And they,
yes.
can, they can then win things with tickets. But if you see anything that you like that they're doing, like you just said, you know, giving someone some space, or you like how they're interacting with their dog, or you thought they were brave for asking a question or whatever, you go up and give them a ticket.
Mm-hmm.
I wish that like we all did that all the time.
I honestly, like, wouldn't the world just be a much nicer place if we all just like reinforced each other for doing job. Nice things, right? Even just, you know, like giving someone a compliment or just being like, oh, that was really nice. Like, I'll be driving along, and if I see someone and they've got a treat pouch and they're like walking down the road and the dog's doing loose leads and they're like, you can see the dog and handle, like, if I can catch their eye and give them like the biggest grin possible,
absolutely.
Like, I will, because, you know, you're making the effort. I mean, likewise, if I see someone going along the road and they're not doing the good stuff and they're being mean or whatever, I will be shaking my head and tutting loudly. Like,
you will be tutting loudly.
It's a very British thing.
I love talking to British people so much.
You tut loudly and shake your head and walk off. And the thing is, right, over here in the UK, if someone does that to you, like, you're mortified. You're like, oh, okay. It must sound so weird. Like, the tut is a very powerful tool over here. In the US, people are just like, why are they making noise? Whatever. Like, Americans don't seem to care about that. I'm not going to lie.
No.
The cultural differences.
For our own special flavor.
Right. So what have you got coming? Obviously, I know you said you're taking a little break from webinars and that kind of thing. But, like, if people want to find out, obviously, Control Unleashed, you can buy online. There's a really cool Facebook group. But where can they find some of your other stuff, articles you've written, things like that?
Yeah, if you go to my publisher, which is Clean Run, which is like a whole sort of dog sports, it's got stores, a store with all kinds of toys, treats, it's got books, it's got videos, it's got everything. If you go to cleanrun.com, you can type in Control Unleashed, tons of things will come up.
Mm-hmm.
We did a virtual conference for 2 years during the pandemic.
Yep.
It's like 3 days of recordings of like tons of different people showing how to use all the patterns and all the other things that we do and all kinds of contexts. And
yep.
you can get all that stuff. You can join my Facebook group to ask a question. It's called Friends of Control Unleashed. If you are a trainer and you're interested in the certification program, that info is on Clean Run too. Just type in Control Unleashed certification. Something will come up and tell you more about it.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's what I'm doing right now. I have some book ideas in the works and stuff like that. And as far as webinars and talks go, the next one is going to be for a trauma and dogs conference at the end of the month. It's a UK.
Is that
conference.
Online or?
Be a virtual conference. It's okay. UK based.
Okay.
Doing it for Danielle Beck, if you know yep. her.
All yep, Danielle's coming on the pod. I'm recording with her, I think, next week. So, yeah,
well, she'll be a future guest. I'm guessing she's going to mention it. So that's my next talk. And
what's your kind of, it's a little bit of an on the spot question, but it just kind of sort of out of my wanderings, what are your kind of plans for sort of the future, where dog training's going, like with the Control Unleashed stuff, like with people getting a bit more involved in sports, like what are your kind of hopes and dreams for dogs for the future? That's like the most broad question I could possibly ask you, right? I'm sorry.
I mean, this is the thing. Like, I tend to exist in this bubble where we're going in the what I consider to be the right direction, but that's not everyone's bubble.
Mm-hmm.
So just the hope that like more and more like science-based humane methods become mainstream.
Yep.
And you know, the people understand that training isn't about just like tell a dog to do something and they have to listen to you, but like meeting needs, setting up conditions, all that, you know, big picture stuff, and
mm-hmm.
more with start buttons and just empowering, and you know, and it's all out there, you know, so just kind of keep supporting people towards it.
Yeah. I think, I mean, I feel, again, maybe I'm also in a little bubble, but I do feel like, I know there are people maybe trying to pop those bubbles from the outside. For me, like, I'm, you know, I'm out with my dog, I'm going to competitions, I'm showing what we're doing. I'm also really open on social media with the journey we're on and all the rest of it. And I think that kind of just keeping it that professionals are helping other professionals, and if you're kind of on the same team, I don't like teams or camps, but people that know will understand what I mean by this. If someone is meant to be in the same team as you, like, be supportive of them. Like, can we stop having bickers in within camp? Like,
oh yeah, people are mean.
Because I'm finding that frustrating at the moment. I'm just like, I'm over here teaching hoopers, having a lovely time, and that's why I'm going to stick to doing things.
Wise. It's a wise choice.
So let me just pick into your competition side of brain. What would kind of be any tips for people that are going to competitions? Maybe they're finding their dogs are struggling a little bit with focus, or maybe they're like arousal's getting a bit much. Just kind of little tips that you would give people that are kind of will help with getting ready for competition and things they can do. Or if you had any like little kind of rituals you did, because I find like I do have certain little rituals I do, but actually I think it helps both of us with that. It adds the predictability of the day of what's going to happen with the stuff and things.
It absolutely does make things predictable. You know, I don't know, like for each individual dog, it might be slightly different. So if you're asking me for sort of like a general helpful.
Yeah, plan, just kind of a nice big sweeping statement.
In terms of like walking through a show area.
Yeah, that would be a good.
Or to the ring type thing, past other things, mm-hmm. right? So I, as if you know me, you know that I teach Dr. Karen O'Rell's biofeedback, right? So it's to teach the dogs to take a big, nice, deep breath.
Mm-hmm.
You can do it too. So it really does help, you know, that you both are doing that very consciously. And then I like the 1-2-3 pattern game. It's a game I made that you touched on earlier, but I made it to walk, you know, to move through past stuff, right? And you can, if you put a treat on the ground and then they eat it and look up at you, you mm-hmm. can turn that orienting to you behavior into a start button behavior, so you don't take a step forward until they've looked at you. And that way focused behavior is making you move. And if they don't want to go towards or past something, they might sniff the ground or do something else, then you don't move.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, I teach the dogs that, you know, three means they're going to get a treat. And then I count backward, you know, I back chain it. So I go 2, 3, and then a treat's available. And then 1, 2, 3. So, if you put the treat on the ground, they look up and that makes you count once you start moving. You can take more steps. Like, you don't have to go one and take one step.
Yep.
You can at first, like to set the concept of mm-hmm. it, just take 3 steps, but ultimately you could just cross a whole room, you know, because they're waiting for the next number. It's like saying 1 is signed a contract with them that you're going to get to 3 eventually. right?
I love that. That's a really good way of explaining it.
Yeah. So, you know, and then when you get to three, you can put the next treat down on the ground and then stand still and they look up and you can keep going. So that's one way you could do it.
Mm-hmm.
You could also feed by hand. If I'm feeding by hand, I like to do it either low so they have to look down because then it gives them a chance to look back up.
Yep.
Or I might feed them a little bit to the side so that they have to turn around to see me. That way they can still do that focus behavior as a star button thing.
That makes sense.
And, you know, I have some, like, dogs that are worried about, like leash runners, you know, like in an agility trial, you take their leash off and then someone comes and takes it. So, like, there's a stranger suddenly behind the dog at the start line, stuff like that. So I do a lot of like start buttons, like dog dips their head and that causes me to take their leash off and like just, you know, give them the control over what's going to happen next. They can do, look at that at the start line, they can turn around, see the leash runner or whatever, look back at their head. I take their leash off. They know that guy's coming. Like, I'm not necessarily saying any of this stuff. It's like, we've practiced it, you know, and they know, like, this is all these things are systems.
Yep.
All these little experiences, going to the ring, getting ready on the start line, doing the course, those are all systems. And we can see what the conditions are that will come up in the systems and how the dog can work them.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It was interesting you used the example of the lead runner because that's one of the things at competition. I mean, everywhere I'm very picky about and selective about where I compete because of what environments Dodge is going to cope with. But if there is a situation where we're kind of going in one side and going out the other, I will just say to them, like, if it's someone that he knows, I can hand them the leads and he doesn't mind the people he knows walking away. But I know for him, a stranger taking his lead, because obviously German Shepherd, he has to control all of the little things. So I'll have to say to him, oh, hang on, I just need to put it there, which I know wastes a little bit of time for the judge. I'm always very appreciative. But if I knew that I was going to have to put his lead, over COVID, we started doing a bucket system. So the person would pick up the bucket. So I managed to kind of practice with people kind of picking up buckets around him and it kind of not being a big deal. But for someone to actually physically take the leash out of my hand, that would be a really big ask for him unless he really knew that person. But it's interesting. I don't know why. I'd never thought of putting a start button on that. Like, I feel like you've just lit a light bulb in my head. And also I've gone, the face that there's no emoji for, you know, where you put your tongue in your bottom left.
Why did your brain not think of that? I have to share this thought with you. My head will explode.
Do it.
I have a game. It's called Voluntary Sharing. Okay. So it's for like resource guarding, but it could absolutely be used for your dog to tell you to give the leash to a stranger. Okay. So if you go to my YouTube channel, which is called Leslie McDevitt's Control on Leash Program, there's a voluntary sharing video with my, my Border Collie and one of my cats. She's telling me I can feed the cat. So what happens is I will sort of shape a start button behavior, like a head lower, chin rest, something like that, and put their treat in a bowl, right? And then I'll just get another bowl. So they do that behavior. Instead of putting a treat in their bowl, I'll put it in the other bowl and then their bowl. So the concept is becoming, if you do the certain behavior that it's going to cause me to put a treat, it's not yours, it's over here. But because I've done that behavior, the behavior of putting a treat over here, means I'm going to feed you here, right? And then I'll add in maybe a stuffed animal, maybe a real animal, maybe a person before an animal, whatever, you know, with whatever distance barriers, whatever you need. But ultimately, though, the animal will do a behavior to tell you to feed or give attention or resources to something else. That's connected to them getting their thing. So like dogs are, you know, dipping their head, telling you to give a treat to another dog or throw a ball for another dog, stuff like that. And people have used it for like a variety of animals, horses, and it's really funny. You get a dog that would have been like growling and stuff, and instead they're like, whatever start button behavior you agreed on, it could be eye contact, chin rest, touching something. They're like doing that. They're like, give him the toy, lady, or pet the cat. I have a really, really
love that.
I have a really cute video from one of my certified instructors where her collie is putting her chin on her leg to tell her that she can feed the little mouse, her little pet mouse, in a cage. It's so cute. And then the mouse comes up and like stands on his little tippy toes to get his treat, and then the collie puts her, it's so cute. So anyway, I would do that.
No, you know? I appreciate that little tidbit for me, but also that is going to help other listeners as well, because if there's any sort of guarding, because resource guarding can be a really hard thing to kind of work around. So if you can make it into a positive of, oh, okay, well, I'm going to get stuff, but you have to do that first. It's a behavior chain, isn't it? But it's a different way of looking at
behavior
it.
Behavior chain. And again, it's putting them in control.
Yes.
I remember once I presented about this at the Aggression in Dogs conference 1 year, and Michael Shikashko was like, cracked me up, because he was like, only you would think of like, well, just have the dog tell you to give the resource to the other dog.
What a brilliant, like, honestly, I thank your spicy brain for going, let's look at this from a different angle, because
right.
Like, honestly, I'm just breathless. Like, I'm bamboozled right now. I'm like, why had I not thought of this? Like, come on, Carrie, you've been training long enough. You know how to do these things, but this.
It's just because I'm weird.
No. Do you know what? There was a Dr. Seuss quote I shared the other day, and it was, you have to be odd to be number one.
Oh, I get it. It's a math joke. Very nice.
But I love that. I'm like, yes, because you do have to be odd to be number one.
Right.
So, Leslie, I'm glad you're odd, because you've just put light bulbs in my head, and I appreciate you. And honestly, as soon as we get off this podcast, I'm going to be going to YouTube and finding your channel.
Look, let me know what you think, because it can be, he can really like it. It'll be really good.
Yeah. And also it's going to give me a nice thing kind of going forward, because he's gotten much better with there being new people and new dogs and stuff in his space. But obviously I'm constantly battling with genetics as well as emotions. So it would be nice to give him an extra tool to go, I'm ready, or actually, hang on, give me a minute, without needing the big dramatic shepherdy roaring that,
oh no, we don't need
is
that.
Better. And to be fair, upwards, I'm touching my head right now for the listeners. We haven't had any real big dramatic roarings. He did get lunged at the weekend by a dog that's person was not being particularly observant to what was going on, and he kind of went raw, and I just went, nope. And he went, oh okay, mum.
Aww.
And then went and did a big shake off. So I'm understanding now more that, like, he kind of goes, I'm gonna, oh yeah, you told me I'm not meant to do that, am I? Okay, fine. Whatever. And then I get that still slight teenage whatever with the huff afterwards, which I'm sure you're just starting to get with your children, but you can relate with dogs when you get that.
The thing is that my children are doing that on purpose to be ironic and funny. So they don't understand, I don't think, that this means that they'll never be able to do it for real, because they've ruined it already. Like, I'll tell my son to do something and he'll go, I didn't ask to be born, mom, like that. And then we'll laugh. He's not going to be able to have an attitude for
you're
real.
Like, dude, you've just ruined your own attitude. Like, and I'm assuming you're not telling him that he's ruining his teenage attitude already. I love that. That's
same amazing. Exact sense of humor. So we just laugh all the time. We can't really have an attitude when you're always laughing.
Hey, right. If you laugh at stuff, the world laughs back, right? And then it just makes everything better. We know that smiles are infectious. So let's just keep reinforcing the good stuff, smiling and laughing, and staying in our bubbles and not letting other people burst them.
In your bubble, seriously, for your own mental health.
Yeah.
I was going to say something about this concept that I really like. It makes me think of it. which is, I like to say, be a reporter, not a reactor. So these types of herding dogs like to report things, you know, and they notice things they like, you know, and they like to, so instead of like reacting at the dog for, you know, mm-hmm. doing whatever a thing that was deemed offensive, he can report it to you.
I mean, some days it's looking at him, you know.
Right. But just that, like, that paradigm shift that, like, oh, you can tattle on that dog. You can tell me that he just looked at you, you know, like, or my,
I like my, that.
My one friend, she goes like, this just in, breaking news, you know, and right. It makes you laugh and you're like, oh, thanks for reporting it. And it just kind of like shifts the energy of it and stuff. And they love to be able to like tell you.
But also, like, yeah, shifting our perception of it, because I found, especially like as a professional dog trainer, when my dog was having these big emotions and having these big reactions, like, it's a little bit embarrassing as well, right? Because you're like, oh, dude, can you like not do that in the public? So actually being able to just kind of go, so here we go. A very English version of that will be, are you being a grass? Are you telling on him? In the UK, we it would be like, he's being a grass. So basically we're gonna turn him into an informant. Grass up the other dogs. I love that.
A criminal informant.
He's like, I can do that. I can be an informant. I can be the best good boy.
That's right.
Leslie, I'm very aware of the time I've taken up. Thank you so much for coming on. I managed to keep my shit together and not fangirl too badly, so yay. No, honestly, because I want to say thank you for the books you've put out, thank you for the content you've put out, because it has made a difference. It does make a difference, and appreciate so much. So if people want to find you, YouTube, Facebook, the books,
yeah. Clean
anywhere
run.
Anywhere else? Are you on TikTok or Threads or any of the
I'm just not kid
stuff? No.
Some of the certified controlled leash instructors are
cool.
Megan Wallace does a lot of TikToks. She's one of them. Adam Scandarani does a lot of them. So they're cool. You know, they're out there, but I'm not.
So we can find the stuff, but from the others, not from you. That's cool. You've trained them, so they're qualified.
Make sure that they're called a CCUI, Certified Controlled Leash Instructor, because I know there's tons of people out there. Some are putting out good content. Some aren't. You know, mm-hmm. like. I don't know them if I didn't certify them or work with them. And sometimes it's wrong. Like people will email me and be like, did you know that there's a YouTube video about this game?
And I get that. And I'm like, they're not a Hooper's World instructor. I didn't train them on this. So, okay. So CCUI is what you're looking for there. Obviously of Hooper's, Canine Hooper's World instructor, affectionately known as a Chewy, because I'm a little bit of a geek and I like it. So, guys, until next time, as always, stay safe, be kind, wash your hands thoroughly, keep your dogs on a lead around livestock, and don't let them lick toads. Take care.
Stay hydrated.
Bye. Guys, I just wanted to ask you a real quick favor. If you could rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast, it's going to help other people find me and listen to what I'm doing here at Canine Hooper's World. We're now on all the socials. So we have the Instagram, we have the Facebook, and we are officially on the TikTok at Canine Hooper's World. And remember to check out our website, www.caninehoopersworld.com, where you can find out information on in-person courses, online courses. And if you're doing Hoopers with your dog, you can also join in with our online achievement awards. These are open to any person, any dog, anywhere in the world to come and test your skills and get yourself a cool ribbon.